Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tim Al. Mr. Matt Weber, S&P Futures. The spoos in September. The SPUs down 7 and the NASDAQ September is 1850, up 1850. As we continue this kind of split between the Dow heading south and the NASDAQ heading up. We're not sure what's causing all this stuff lately, but, we just report on it, Matty, right? We just report. What can I say?
That's right.
It's hard to, do anything else. Now, should I report about the guy losing his hat this morning? Kevin, how are you?
It's good. I'm dying to know what happened to the guy who lost his hat.
So I pull up in front of Maddie's place, which, of course, he moves into this place with all due, you know, just regular kind of enthusiasm. Within what? Was it a day, Maddie? They start tearing up your street?
Yeah, basically the next week after we moved in, we get settled. We're like, oh, this is great. Can't wait to explore the neighborhood. And then they tore up our entire street for a mile right in front of our house.
That's kind of getting worse by the day. You know,
yeah, just like hardcore construction that's going to take like 4 months.
So you can only go east on Hermitage. So I got to take, Cortland all the way down
to Damon.
Damon and then swing around. But anyway, so we can deal with it. We're city people. So today I stop and this bozo comes by on a motorcycle. Of course, it's raining. It was still raining when I pulled up. And he's got, like, no helmet on, no visor, nothing. He's got, like, some sunglasses and a baseball hat. Well, off flies the baseball hat. Quick look around, almost torpedoes the cycle, just keeps going. Next guy runs over. I go, well, he better not turn around now. It was a white hat, of course, Kevin. You know,
Of course.
So on the next four cars, three of them dead midships run over the thing, right? Like they were aiming for it. I'm going, well, that hat's no good anymore. We're just saying. God. The interesting goings-on with the commodity prices. Yesterday was one of the more unusual days I've seen, a day after the Fed announcement. And the idea is that these precious metals, I mean, the theory is, okay, I mean, when you, it's sort of the same thing as your, the premium or discount on the SPOOs, the S&P futures, kick me or turn me off, man, if I'm getting too technical this hour in the morning. The premium, if you buy the stocks, okay, this is not if Daddy Warbucks buys them with cash, but everything has to be priced as if you're borrowing money for it, okay? Now, we've lost all this mental discipline because these rates have been so low. But essentially, if you go out and buy $1 billion worth of stock, you've got to pay it's going to be priced as if you're paying the interest on the stock, all right? So say if the interest is 3%, I use that term normal, I keep saying that even though it's not normal anymore. Okay, now what happens? You got to pay interest to keep the stocks, right? What's the advantage of owning the stocks? You get the dividend. So if the interest rate is 3% and the dividend rate is 2.5%, the premium on the futures over the individual, over the cash, they call it, should be 0.5% divided by 360 on any given day. Okay, so same thing with the same sort of, although I don't follow it quite as well, same sort of thing with your metals. Okay, but now the metals aren't, it's not as pure of a thought process, although people on TV will tell you that it is. Take gold, for instance, same sort of thing. If I want to own gold versus the future, all right, I just want to own gold, what am I going to have to do? I got to pay interest to buy it. And oh, by the way, I can't really put it in my back pocket. You know, the belt's not strong enough, I'll lose my trousers, which nobody wants to see. So you have to store it. So you got to pay to store it, and by the way, you got to pay to borrow it. So in theory, when the interest rate goes up, the price of gold, with all other things being equal, okay, which never happens, the price of gold should go down like a little bit, all right? But we're talking about interest rates going up maybe 2 years from now, maybe a half a percent, according to Powell, which, of course, is total BS, but still, that's what he's saying. But now, if interest rates do go up, it's probably because inflation is going up. Well, if inflation is going up, gold and silver and these metals are probably going to go up at least with the inflation rate, and maybe even more so because people consider gold and maybe silver, or used to anyway, before Bitcoin, somewhat of an inflation hedge because they would go up and other stuff wouldn't. So in theory, if interest rates go up, these things should go down, all right, a little bit. But then in the last couple of days, but then if inflation goes up, they should go up, all right? So we're talking about, it's kind of convoluted. But now yesterday, it's really bizarre because the Fed says interest rates are going up. They must have poured God knows how much money into the system. So gold gets clobbered, so does palladium, platinum, all these precious metals. But the interest rates actually go down. So there's a big down move in rates yesterday. So is that totally off the wall, illogical, Kevin, or what? Yesterday was one of the most confusing days of trade I've ever seen. So there you go.
Well, you know, we are in times that are that have been irrational in many ways, and now it's going to transition to a different kind of irrational. How's that for a deep thought?
Well, I think, remember when you were, I don't think people, when I say no matter how old you get, you're still a little boy at heart when they talk to guys. I don't know what they talk about when they talk to women, but that nothing ever really changes. That I'm sure at some point, your mom, who was a pretty bright lady, when you or your bros told a whopper, she just let you sit with it for like 3-4 days. I know mine did once. And I found myself, I never really was a liar to start with, but once, I forget what the subject was, but I lobbed one out there. And like 2 or 3 days later, she finally said, you know, look how many lies you had to tell just to protect the first one. I mean, once you start down that road, you just gotta keep going. And I said, you know, you're right. She says, just don't tell the first one. Look how much work it's been just to cover your whopper from 2 days ago. You know what? It was a conversation I never forgot. Now, when the Fed does, and these governments do stuff, on any subject, be it COVID, be it finance, be it whatever, road building, when they start out from a spot that isn't true, or they can't back up, what does the next year bring? Whopper after whopper after whopper, but a politician evidently doesn't have a mother to say, knock it off. Maybe they should. right? They keep at it.
Well, that's supposed to be Nancy Pelosi, but she tells the whoppers, too.
Yeah, she tells them, too.
She's Congress's mom.
So here today we've got this inflation starting all over the world. So now China, who really is, talk about telling the whoppers, what they did yesterday, which I think is probably part of why you saw that I'm looking at this. Now, first of all, Kevin, this isn't right, what I saw. What I just said is that should never happen. Okay, so am I immediately smelling a rat? Now, the question is, where do you smell the rat, right? So now it turns out this morning, I'm reading this article by Jesse, how's this for a name, Jesse Pound? You think that guy's ever gotten any grief as he went through life? Anyway, it's a pretty darn good article about how...
It's what you'd call the unfortunate name, yes.
Yes, it's like, you remember the, what was it, the Far Side? You had these two deer sitting there. And one deer's got a target on his chest. And the other guy goes, bummer of a birthmark, Hal. So now China's decided that the price of commodities are going too high. So they're investigating all the commodity traders, these guys that have driven the prices up. And oh, by the way, they're selling a bunch of commodities out of their essentially private stock. Because, of course, these guys, all these governments have all these commodities. They're taking steps to cool off rising prices as the U.S. dollar strengthens, blah, blah, blah. So that says here, they got all these prices listed. Boy, the price of corn is down like 21% from where it was up to $7.58, which is really high for corn. Soybeans down 15 cents. Chinese government agent announced the plan on Wednesday to release reserves of key metals, including copper and aluminum, according to Reuters. Officials in the country have also warned about speculation in financial markets in recent weeks. Does anybody think, I hope I'm not infecting people. Does anybody think that some of the in guys in China, some of the guys that I've met when they've come over here for these things with the commodity, does anybody think any of these bleeps front ran this announcement and like sold the stuff? Did anybody think that that's even a possibility?
No, it would never happen.
No, I mean.
It wouldn't be appropriate, so nobody's going to do that.
Base metal prices are melting as China's State of Council escalates its crackdown against commodity speculators and hoarders. No, they're not a speculator or hoarders by trade ahead of actual government sales. That's legitimate government, right? Yeah, Manny, am I getting too old when I'm laughing at this stuff or what? I mean, it is so bizarre.
And it's daily.
Yeah, it's daily. By investigating state-owned enterprises, overseas positions, and auditing futures firms to combat squeezed profit margins. What in the hell are they talking about? Just Kevin, just as you think you'll never hear something more bizarre from me this morning, this is about as bizarre as it gets. Just saying.
Well, yeah, I'm with you, Tom. But what do you expect anymore? It really is. You're right. You laugh at it, but it's an uncomfortable laugh. And you mentioned yesterday you were talking about newspeak and doublespeak and all the stuff from 1984. I just read something that I really need to read Orwell's essays because 1984 was interesting, but he wrote a lot of essays that are really kind of harbinger of times to come. So I'm going to have to dig into that.
Well, yeah, I was one summer when I was a janitor, then I became a custodian. Is a custodian that much higher up the chain than a janitor? Anyway, but one summer I was for two summers, I was at South Shore High School, which is where Susie Orman graduated from, by the way. And the head janitor was a guy named Ellie Walker, one of the nicest men I ever met. Big African-American guy, good football player. Then, well, of course, one week comes in, his knees all swelled up because he was still playing football at age 35. But he didn't need surgery, thankfully. And I said, "You seem in a down mood today. What's going on?" He goes, "Well, you know, my two kids, my two boys are acting like they're being pretty slick. I'm gonna have to lean on them." Slick was the term. And he goes, "You know, what's with these kids? Don't they realize that we were kids once, and this crazy stuff they do, we probably did better than them. We remember it." <It's> like, you know, talk about a word about parenting that probably is in every single father's brain at some point in his life, right? What, these kids think I didn't do this myself? I don't know the drill. I mean,
Oh yeah. In fact, I used to get the question, "Well, Dad, what kinds of things did you do when you were my age?" And my standard response was, "I'll tell you when you're my age," because I did not want to set the boundaries out farther than they needed to be. If his boundary was at 6. And I had been to 8, then that's just going to be, you can go to 8 before you get in big trouble.
Well, Ellie actually said to me, he goes, "You know, I'm getting a little worried about how smart these kids are, because I was a hell of a lot slicker when I was their age." He goes, "I hope I'm not raising a couple of dummies," he says to me. Anyway, so yesterday I got a little quick inflation story, and then we'll talk about something serious. Or we'll talk about sports, which I guess are serious too.
We got to say something serious like baseball.
Yeah,
and we got Bears news.
Yeah, Bears news. Yes. But I had to run an errand yesterday. I picked up a bunch of windows. I'm putting some new windows in. We're Maddie's older apartment. But anyway, because I didn't want to do it while people were there. So I go to my place on 35th Street. Of course, my attorney buddy says, "Geez, how much you pay for the windows?" I said, "Well, it's not two windows. It's actually like 7 of them you put in there." I said, "They were like $1,900. They're up from last time." And he goes, "I just got an estimate on one of them from Menards, just a regular old window, and they wanted $1,200. I said, "Well, what are you doing going to Menards? I got places you can go. These guys are, it's a neighborhood-owned place. They do a terrific job." Anyway, so on the way back, I'm thinking, all right, I better get some lunch for the office. There's still no place to go downtown, really, as amazing as that is. So I know there's this place, well, my nephew tells me there's a place on 18th Street, in the right in the middle of the hood, right? So they make
Martin Pilsen, right?
Yeah. So I pile in, and of course it's this, little tiny spot. I pull in and I go, and they have this, marinated pork and stuff, and it's pork shoulder, okay, which is delicious. But I also know that even with the price increases, because I was at the depot last weekend, it's $1.59 a pound for a big pork shoulder. Used to be, $1.09, forever. Now it's $1.59. So I pile in, and the lady, of course, sometimes she can do English and sometimes she can't, so I know I'm in trouble right away. And And she says, well, do you want just the pork or do you want the stomach too? I go, no, lay off the stomach. Just give me the pork. I don't know. His stomach might be good, but I wasn't ready for it yesterday. So I go, well, give me a couple of things of rice. We're talking 8-ounce cups of rice and one of beans. Okay. Guess how much?
Well, how many tacos did you get?
None. We just got the pork and we got a thing of
Is it like just a pork entree or what?
No, they give you two. We bought 2 pounds of pork.
Okay, 2 pounds of pork.
And then I got.
They give you tortillas or something?
Yeah, and I got like 8 tortillas. And I got the 2 8-ounce glass, coffee cups, styrofoam cups of rice, and one of beans.
And then they throw some salsa in there, whatever.
No, I asked for the salsa 3 times. She kept telling me it was in the bag and I didn't have any.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't even get any salsa. So, I mean, every time I asked something for something else, then she couldn't speak English. But when it came to give me the price, then guess how much?
I'll let Kevin guess.
$14.
Maddie?
$24.
2 pounds of pork and rice and beans. I'm going to say $25 to $28.
$36.
Yeah, that's high.
Wow.
I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, what are we? I'm going to say that. Now, granted,
it'd be the best pork ever.
It's really good. But I mean, they marinated for probably 8 hours. I mean, probably cooked it for another 6. I mean, but the base cost of what they gave me, I'm going to say, is $4 tops. So it's essentially 9 to 1. We'll say 8 to 1 because $3 are taxes. That's in a carryout establishment. That's a lot. That's a real lot.
Exactly. It's not like they have a ton of staff that they're paying or anything like that.
No. So I'm saying it's a lot. I mean, if you, not that I want to ruin your dinner this weekend, as you take your girl or wife
out
to dinner.
It does sound good, though.
Oh, it was real good. Or some in the fridge. You can have some. But the, they do a nice job, and the lady gets out there with the big cleaver and starts hacking it away, which is great. But I mean, every place you go now, I mean, if they're talking about a $7 or $8 bottle of wine, we're talking $9 a glass. It's bizarre. I mean, omelets are $13-14 everywhere, and eggs are $1.20 a dozen. I mean, forget. I mean, we're talking 9-10 to 1 at some places. That's why breakfasts are so good. The margin is even better. I mean, where's the limit? I mean, where can we go? Where here it's $100 for like one egg. Why don't you just charge a cover to come in and say this is what's going to cost to take your girlfriend out for dinner? Give me $50 and then price the meals accordingly, right?
We actually went to a place like that on Sunday. My mom was in town, so my brother picked a place to sit outside to have brunch. And basically, the deal was, and he was paying, so I didn't care, but the deal was it's $30 to walk in the door per person. And you're going to get all the breakfast you want and all the mimosa or if you want a Bloody Mary or coffee or whatever you want. And they had an omelet guy and they had, potatoes and desserts and, whatever you wanted. And that was it. It was $30 to walk in the door and get whatever you want. And I felt like I had about, $10 worth of food.
Yeah.
And, I had a cup of coffee and an orange juice. So, they made a little extra on me, but at least they were upfront about it.
I bet they didn't. I mean, if you would have gone, if you had anything to drink.
Which we didn't.
Okay.
Normally I probably would have, but, I wasn't going to get trashed sitting there with my mom, so.
No. Not that you haven't done that before.
No, but not that I haven't done that before.
But she usually gets trashed with you.
Yes.
Yeah, but you don't get trashed with mom unless mom wants to get trashed too.
Exactly. Yeah. And on a Sunday morning, that's not exactly the time she's getting trashed.
Yeah, my mom was such an odd duck. I mean, if you took her anywhere, she had to have her one Manhattan, and that was it. I mean, she was then her one glass of wine or two, and she really loved it, but she was just a one deal.
Yeah.
Never trash, never, but she really enjoyed it with dinner, type of thing. Matter of fact, we were when she was doing chemo, we went out afterward, and she'd say, well, I don't think, tell me that, I'm not supposed to have a drink. I feel fine. I'm having a drink. Mom, if you want a drink, have a drink. You're doing chemo, for God's sake. You only have one. But anyway, so what's with the deal with the – are the Bears going to – just to set the stage on Dub Bears, long before Soldier Field was built, the Bears were hunting around for a place, right? And a little known – they're now in second place, I think, although time has gone by. There were more professional football games played at this one venue than any other place in football, and they just got passed up. It's going to be Wrigley Field. Bears
right.
played there forever. And they finally got passed up just a little bit by the old Giants Stadium because they had two teams playing there, the Jets and the Giants. So anyway, so the Bears at Wrigley Field, like, forever. So then they decided, all right, we're going to move. So they moved to Soldier Field. And so the original Soldier Field was El Crapo. I mean, it was designed as a 100,000-seat, what was it, a track and field stadium. It was designed for the, was it for the Pan American Games? And, like, anyone should look that up.
Yeah, something like that.
I'm going to guess
yeah.
Pan American Games in, like, 1908 or something like that. And it actually, you could have stock car races in there, which they had. And anyway, so then the Bears went over there, and then they gradually made it better, made it better, made it better, until it wasn't all that horrible. But it still was pretty bad compared to any new stadium. So they decided, all right, we're going to build this. But in the meantime, they were going to build a stadium over on the west side near United Center. Well, near the old Chicago Stadium. There was no United Center at the time. So just so happened, some of my buddies and your buddies, too, were on the law firm that represented the Wirtzes, because the Wirtzes really didn't want them over there. And, of course, the McCaskies wanted... They go to the it's the veto session of the where all the nasty stuff takes place in the veto session, right, Kevin? Where nothing else is supposed to take place. It's like a 2-week session in December, the Illinois legislature. And it's only supposed to be for stuff they already passed. Well, of course, like every year they break that rule and something monumentous comes out of there. So that's when they're fighting over this where they're going to put the stadium over there. But what do you think the thing fell apart on, Kevin? Only you could be probably sneaky enough to even think what this is. Now, one would think we care about the fans, we're putting up a stadium, blah, blah, blah. That's so far from the truth. Guess what the thing fell apart about?
Oh, boy, that's a historical item that I should remember. I don't remember at all, Tom. What made it fall apart?
The McCaskies, the Wirtzes, because they're so powerful... It's got to be the only mecca of sport in the friggin' world where the rapid transit line goes through the parking lot and there's not a station. So we have to have so many people driving over there, which is insane. The Wirtzes own, I'm going to say, 80% of the parking lots around there. There's other people that own them because I knew from the club a few guys that own a few of them, and they're big money for a few people that own those lots. And so the Wirtzes... The McCaskies wanted the city to condemn the Wirtz's parking lots and turn them into McCaskey parking lots. Now, condemnation procedures are supposed to be that if Matty Weber has a house and somebody decides to put like an expressway or a big, you know, an overhead, they do something with the Ravenswood and put a bridge there. Condemnations are supposed to be like for the, I don't know what the definition is, it's supposed to be for the public good, essentially. Kevin, and that has been expanded over time. To where it's now done for business. If it's an area that is, you know, maybe it's a bunch of cleaners and delicatessens or whatever, it's been expanded to we can condemn your business and put like a Walmart here, which is a big leap, and not a whole lot of citizens agree with that. Remember the story when the Supreme Court okayed that, and one of the judges, Souter's still there, isn't he? I think at the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
I should know that. Remember the guys that ran out and his. He's got a summer home in Vermont that he loves. So these guys went out in the summer home and started pounding signs into his grass saying, we're going to condemn this for a Walmart. Just so he had a feeling of what it was like to actually have it happen to you. And, I'm not into people trespassing, but I love that. why did I love that, guys? I mean, yeah, it could happen to you. If it happens to somebody else, it's okay, but if it happens to you, it's not so good, right? But that's been happening all over. So our Supreme Court greatly expanded that power. Anyway, they ended up getting shut down, and that's why the whole thing fell apart. Was not about whether it was a good place to put a stadium. It got about who's going to get what, the sharing between the Wirtzes and the McCaskies. Is that bizarre, Kevin?
Well, so did it fall apart over... disagreement on how to split the money, or did Wirtz, the Wirtz family just not want it there at all?
I think in a certain way, well, if everybody's going to park in his parking lots, he probably thought it was great.
Okay, I was just curious about that, because my next question would be why? Why wouldn't they want it there at all? I don't know, I can't fathom an answer to.
Well, I think it was all in the devil was in the details. I mean, if they would have come over and said, we're going to buy up this piece of property, build a stadium, by the way, we'll use all your parking lots and all that stuff, I'm sure Wirtz would have been ecstatic. But that's not the way they went at it. They wanted it to become their neighborhood because they wanted a big horse on the block and him to be the second horse. And he was there first. And I think he had better lawyers.
Well, that's a pretty arrogant approach to it, don't you think?
Yeah, well, because he had better lawyers, two of which we know. Just saying. But now the story is, Matty, why don't you tell? You know more about it than I do.
Yeah, so, and we got to go to break here in a minute, but I'll set the stage and then we can talk about it after the break. Essentially, Arlington Racecourse is up for sale, and the Bears want a bigger stadium because they have the smallest capacity in arguably the largest football market because there's only one team here, and it's a 10-million-person market. And they want a bigger, better stadium with a retractable roof. They want to make renovations that they simply can't do because of the space and the landmark status of the current location. And they want some of the other stuff that goes with being out in the suburbs, like the Metro stop goes right to that place. There's a big area for, you know, building up their own, bars and different things like that, like a lot of modern places are doing. And then they can ideally attract a Super Bowl and Final Fours and make all kinds of money. So that was their position, and they announced yesterday, that the president of the team announced that we formally placed a bid on that piece of land. Then Lori Lightfoot, the mayor, released a statement, and I'll pull it up here so I can read exactly what it was, because it was great. she said, and I'm going to try to find it quickly here, her statement: "Our city is home to some of the world's finest sports teams who have played a vital role in the city's reopening. As part of the city's recovery, many organizations are doubling down on their commitment to Chicago, and we expect the Bears to follow suit. The Bears are locked into a lease at Soldier Field until 2033. In addition, this announcement from the Bears comes in the midst of negotiations for improvements at Soldier Field. This is clearly a negotiating tactic that the Bears have used before. As a season ticket holder and longtime Bears fan, I am committed to keeping the Chicago name in our football team. And like most Bears fans, we want the organization to focus on putting a winning team on the field, beating the Packers finally, and being relevant past October. Everything else is noise."
Well, let's go to break and talk about what we get back. SP Futures now down 10. NASDAQ only up 1. I'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Hey, wait a minute, guys. I got a question. What are we even doing here? Why is the exchange even open? It's Juneteenth.
Juneteenth is tomorrow, actually.
Doesn't matter. Everybody was given a day off today.
So is that in effect?
Federal government, Biden told everybody to take a day off.
I saw that, but is that actually in effect this year, or is that beginning next year?
Most companies, let's put it this way, at least deferred it to next year.
Yeah, because my company didn't do anything. I know that.
Well, you're not off Veterans Day. You're not off Columbus Day.
True. Okay, so companies are going to choose. They have probably already picked their 2021 holidays by now, obviously.
Yeah.
So in 2022, they'll decide if this is the day.
So what are we up to, 11 or 12 federal holidays now?
I can look.
Because,
are the markets going to be closed on this day?
Okay. Well, this year they said it was too close to call, so no. But they're putting it off. For a while for it to be closed on Martin Luther King.
I wonder if my 9 o'clock meeting is canceled.
Yeah, we're not closed on Veterans Day. We're not closed on Columbus Day.
Yeah, there are now 12 holidays for federal workers in the U.S.
I think the exchanges only get like 5 of them.
Yeah, I saw a tweet last night that said, great, now a whole bunch of mostly white federal workers have the day off.
Yeah.
Juneteenth.
Yeah, I just, well, let's do this first, and I'm going to rant on that just for a bit. Whatever. Anyway, S&P futures down 10. NASDAQ futures up 25 cents. Dow futures are down 145. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 152. That's a full 1%. FTSE down 84, 1.2%. I think people are getting kind of shaken at how much these governments are now having to maneuver these markets on their own. It's just not healthy. I mean, I'm a free market kind of guy. It's just not healthy. CAC around down 41.6, so they're like the best of the gang. Nikkei down 54.2%. Shanghai down 51 cents. Call that flat. Hang Seng, just to be different, is up 242.8%. Yesterday, Dow was down 210. Get a load of this. Dow was down 210. S&P down 180, so like flat. NASDAQ up 121. How's that for, bizarre day? Bonds, 1.49, down 2 basis points. Bund, minus 1 basis point to minus 0.20. I can't imagine how much those guys in the central bank over in Europe have to be buying of every single bond issue that comes out to keep those rates negative. When, God bless, the inflation's 5% and you're giving some money to somebody and they're giving you less at the end of the year. It's unfathomable. Japan is positive 0.06. Oil up 39, sorry, down 39 cents, 70.65. Oil took a big hit yesterday as obviously all these people are selling every commodity they can to the countries. Brent down 50 cents, 72.58. Natural gas down 5 cents, 3.19. Arbob's not down. It's unchanged at 2.12. Gold back up 18 bucks today, trying to get back to 1800, 1793. It was down like 80 yesterday. Silver up 59 cents, so trying to bounce back, but it's 26.46. It was over 27 for a while, so it's got a ways to bounce. Copper unchanged at 418. Copper didn't go down very much. Platinum up 22. They were down a bunch yesterday. Palladium up 13. So everybody's doing it. I'm going to say it's probably a Fibonacci bounce, probably two-thirds of the way back in silver. Crypto down 13 bucks, 37,754 in a Bitcoin. So that took a hit yesterday as well. Maddie, what do you got for us, Traffic, Weather, Sports?
Coming up on 38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have rainy conditions right now this morning that should clear up here in a little bit, but that's causing some slow traffic times, and it's led to a couple of accidents as well. We have a crash on the Kennedy right at Armitage, which is exit 48A. Unfortunately, it doesn't tell me if it's on the inbound or outbound side. So I can't tell you which side it's on.
Well, this is just there on the inbound. We didn't see anything.
We didn't see anything, but this just happened. Right. But it's at Kennedy and the Armitage. But like I said, I can't tell you if it's inbound or outbound, but there is a crash there that's causing delays. We also have an issue on Lakeshore Drive. There is a downed tree that happened because of the storm that happened earlier this morning, and this is blocking the right lane on the northbound side at LaSalle. So Lakeshore Drive is slow because of that, heading northbound right at LaSalle there. No issues on the Edens, Eisenhower, and Stevenson traffic building, but no accidents to report. Same for the Southside expressways. We do have an announcement. I-355 starting at 7 o'clock tonight will reduce the tollway to 2 lanes in each direction between Butterfield and north of Roosevelt Road until Monday, June 21st. So this is just going to affect the weekend traffic beginning tonight and then lasting through Monday morning, assuming they end on time. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, cloudy and rainy early. Some storms in the area, and then should clear up later this morning, and then it's going to get hot and humid today with a high of 87, and it's going to be in the low 90s further inland. But downtown, sunshine this afternoon, hot and humid, a high of 87. Right now it's rainy and 67 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 117 today. Right now it's clear and 93. In sports, the Cubs stopped the bleeding in New York. They shut out the Mets last night 2-0 to salvage the final game of the four-game set. In fact, the Cubs have not been swept all season in a three- or four-game series, which is kind of surprising this late into the season.
Well, you don't want to start with a four-gamer.
You definitely do not. And they also got some help from everyone else, as the Brewers, Cardinals, and Reds all lost, so the Cubs are now a game up in first place in the NL Central. White Sox were blown out down in Houston, losing 10-2 last night. Diamondbacks were blown out by the Giants, 10-3. Gee.
What was the story on DeGrom's MRI?
So I didn't hear all the details, but I heard that it was good news. So it wasn't any kind of like season ender or anything. They think it was just kind of a mild strain, and they're being very cautious with it. And he may go on the 10-day IL, but I don't think they think he's going to be shut down or anything. That's what I. That's the initial reports I heard.
Talk
about a dominant start to that game.
Oh, yeah.
Three innings of perfect baseball, striking out 8 of the 9 batters. Like, he was on his way to a Kerry Wood game.
Well, does anybody think that you should have a counseling session with some of these guys and say, you're one hell of a pitcher. You really don't have to throw 100 miles an hour to get the other pitcher out. Can you pace yourself at least a little?
I agree.
I mean, what does Rand Coomer call it? A maximum effort pitch. Does every pitch have to be maximum effort?
Well, Kyle Hendricks, who improved 9-4 on the season, he had a pretty bad April. For whatever reason, he just couldn't find. He said it was a mechanical thing, and he just couldn't find the release point that he needed. But his last, 10 starts, I would say 8 of them have been really good, including last night. He throws a shutout. And he's got his ERA down to 4, and he's not a max effort guy at all. He's just 88.
No, there is nothing max effort about his pitches.
He's 87, 88, changes speeds, in and out of the strike zone, up and down. And then if he really reaches back, he can touch 90 about 2 times a game. And that's about it.
Well, I read on the internet the other day. Of course, if it's on the internet, it's got to be true, right? That just the threat of this not using the substance that they're putting on the ball, that in the last 2 or 3 weeks, the batting averages are up like 20 points.
I love it. And by the way, I do want to get your guys' thoughts on the Bears thing that we started before the break. But when I'm listening to these pitchers bitching about, I can't believe they're doing this in the middle of the season, we need time to adjust, blah, blah, blah. You were cheating.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
You got caught cheating. Yeah. Stop cheating.
You need time to adjust to not cheating.
Yes. Like, I mean, oh, my God. And it's like one sob story after another. And meanwhile, the hitters are batting 230 as a league. And they're like, they're finally getting a break here. It's like you're crying about getting caught cheating? Like, Jesus.
Well, they're up to 230. That's what
No, they're up to like 235 now.
Okay. They were at, whatever. Who's is it? Boog?
Yeah, Boog's
talking about it last night. Yeah.
Yeah, they were. They're up to the batting averages are starting to go up. They were at 230 for the better part of the season until the last couple of weeks.
Well, Manny, my story on the story on Juneteenth. Let's do our Arlington first. If the Bears, first of all, I think if you went back and looked at the politics on why Arlington Park is being sold in the first place, you'd wonder. You'd shake your head and you'd say, "Why has?" Is that was the gambling mecca for a long time, and it's a beautiful place, a nice day. Not that people should love horse racing, whatever, but
it's great going out there. And you can hop on the train, and you're there in 30 minutes, and you can have a couple beers on the train if you want, and it drops you off right at the front door.
But somewhere along the line, Dutchie Schwab pissed somebody off. I mean, and so every new advancement look at politics in a way that I've come to look at it, which is not so good. And I think Kevin never wants to agree with me, but I think he will. It's not about getting more money necessarily for the state in the gambling thing. It's about rewarding certain people to all of a sudden get a license that's worth like a friggin' fortune. So it wasn't about when you went. The only thing that helped the track guys was when they gave them the off-track betting. Now, even that, nobody got the bid. This, quick story. Nobody got the bid on off-track betting. All right. And matter of fact, Steinbrenner, for people who don't remember this, came in and bought Balmoral Park, which is way on the south side. Nobody goes there. Had a harness, they had the harness track open for, you know, 4 weeks or something. It was their meet. I actually went there a few times with my parents. But, and I say, why the hell did Steinbrenner buy Balmoral Park? Well, it turns out that 4 or 5 months later, they decided to give these off-track betting facilities. And now Steinbrenner, do you think he got the heads up on this? Like, we couldn't have put some people together on the trading floor to buy the damn place? It wasn't that expensive. All of a sudden, everybody who owned a track, no matter what the track was, got an off-track betting location. And then years later, they got a second location. So nobody else was included in the click, right? And then all of a sudden, they start to do the casinos, and they say, well, wait a minute, we want a whole different group of people on that, because it was a different group of people in the legislature. I think we had a different mayor, although there's no casino in Chicago. And all of a sudden, the gang changed. Well, those were yesterday's politicians' boys. We want new boys, or girls, mostly boys. So now we're going to have this casino group. And we don't care about Dutchie Swine or Arlington Park and these places. So even though there became video poker in bars, there was no video poker in Arlington Park. Even though there's a million people there gambling, you couldn't have a slot machine there, even though it was more money for the state, so they essentially, as the new places have gone on, they've made sure that Arlington was never competitive. Because you couldn't go there, and if somebody didn't like horse races, bet on a video poker machine like you could in a restaurant. Not that I'm saying it's good for people, but I mean it's more than just people not wanting to do horse betting anymore. Now, as you can see, these sports things that are opening up, I don't think any of them do horse betting, do they, Minnie? Like the ones in Wrigley Field and so forth?
No, they don't. It's really difficult, and I don't know if it's like that in every state, but in Illinois, on the apps, it's very easy to bet a baseball game or football or whatever, but they make it really difficult to bet horse races.
Because they're the new guys now, and they're paying off the new legislators. So you see these iterations. The casino guys, they're the part that goes over the fence last. I mean, they're the ass end of this.
So is horse racing just going to be gone in Chicago?
Are they
finding a new location?
No, it's just going to be Hawthorne Park, probably.
So that's it. They're not going to build
They're going to do the harnesses, and they're probably going to do the flats same day. I don't know. You know, I don't know if you can do that, because I think the tracks are different. You have to have a different stuff on the track.
That really sucks.
Yeah. Well, Sportsman's is gone. Balmoral's gone. What was the other one?
But you got to have one track, for God's sake.
You would think.
Sportsman's Park is...
Yeah, well, gone. What was the other one? Maywood is
Maywood,
gone.
Yeah.
Maywood's gone. But I don't think you can run... I don't know. I don't think you can run thoroughbreds and then do the harnesses at night. I think that there's a different, texture to the track for the buggies versus... I'm not positive.
There's got to be more money in thoroughbreds, isn't there?
You usually get bigger crowds. They would always get bigger crowds at night in the harnesses.
Really?
Cool. It's at night. I mean...
Yeah.
But Saturday night at Sportsman or Hawthorne was packed. I mean, just packed. But it's all about favoring who becomes the new... Now it's all about sports betting. We're going to let the tracks flow.
Let's go back to the Bears here, because we're...
Well, they're going to... Okay, so they're going to... If the Bears bought Arlington Park, if it was like PTI Securities buying a piece of property, building a building, without asking for money, nobody would give a rat's behind. But you know that's not going to happen. Now, if the Bears decided we want out of this deal, we don't want to be part of any city helping us out or nothing. We're just going to buy Arlington Park. We're going to build our own place. This is America. You get to do that. But why do we know that that's not the case?
Well, they still do have their lease commitment.
Yep.
So they could probably have something up and running way before the end of their lease. And what was it, 2033?
Yep.
They could probably do that. But if they're going to get government money involved and, you know, infrastructure build out and all this other kind of crap that usually happens, I don't think the lease duration is a showstopper here, because it's going to take them that long to do it.
Oh, sure. Well, the other.
So I don't think that's a consideration, and even though Mayor Lightfoot put it out there, she did take a really good shot at him, which was kind of fun. But she also made it very personal, which I think is a bad negotiating tactic.
If she was
something to keep in mind on that one is it's probably not a good route to go I don't think anybody teaches negotiation where you should get, you know, really PO'd. And,
I think if...
That's her biggest weakness, I think, yep. just as a mayor in general, is she takes everything personal, and she's very vindictive, and I think it's a character flaw.
Well, I'm going to lob this one out there, if you guys don't mind. I've heard from my peeps that one of the biggest issues with Soldier Field is that somehow or another, all these owners now are sharing all this money. Kevin, more so than they were, and I don't know the details.
NFL owners.
And the big bitch around the league is that the Chicago lease. Now, I don't think you have to share like your live gate or anything like that, or your hot dog sales, but somehow or another, naming rights are part of the shared thing. So if United Airlines were to do Soldier Field for $30 million a year. I think every team gets a mill. Right? Somehow or another, that's part of the shared. So there's a lot of pressure, from what I understand, on the McCaskies that they're basically screwing the rest of the owners by signing up for a deal that doesn't allow them to sell naming rights, because that is shared amongst all the rest of the guys.
Right, and they don't own the stadium, so
right, they can't. That was part.
They can't control the naming.
I would 90% guarantee you that part of the negotiating piece to stay there is that the Bears get to sell the naming rights and keep that all themselves and share. Now, if Lori was, I'll say a little sharper tack in the drawer, I'm not saying she's not dumb, so I'm not accusing her of that, but if you're going to say this, say, you know what? I know what's going on here, and here's what I'm going to do. You guys are trying to hustle us for money. I'm going to send a letter to Joe Biden and 15 different congressmen about the antitrust stuff that you guys really don't have. And I'm going to say that this is all illegal and it should be taken a look like by Congress. Why didn't she say something like that? The fact that you guys are hustling me for naming rights so you can share it among yourselves, that's not competition.
The naming rights, though, is such a small percentage of the pie. I mean, that's like pennies.
Maddie, somewhere what you should have learned by being around rich people is that rich people, they don't care if the hot dog is 5 cents less than somebody else. They're pissed off, even if the guy has $90 billion.
Well, you're probably right about that. I think the Bears
isn't there also the isn't there also a percentage of the gate factor that goes in there too?
I don't. I think the home gate is pretty much yours.
And so if you're limited in stadium size, when they could be at 80,000, that's a problem as well for the other owners, because they're getting a percentage of the smaller pie.
I think the stadium right, the naming rights goes into a different pot. I think the home gate's yours.
To a huge extent. Share the TV contract.
And I'm sitting here thinking, I don't think so. We got to resolve that. But I'm thinking that's not the case.
I think the Bears and the Packers are the only two stadiums in the NFL that don't have naming rights.
Yeah, and the other owners are seriously
pissed. So the other 30 owners.
Well, because they're sharing and they're not getting anything back. And right. In their mind, they're getting screwed. Right?
Sure. So what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I know that a Skybox, this is 7-8 years ago. Guess how much a Skybox ticket is?
One ticket?
Yeah.
Not including your food and booze?
Right. It includes the parking. For
300.
Maddie.
My way off?
I'm worried about you.
I've actually, I've been to Bears Skybox a couple times. I've never had to pay, so I don't know.
Well, the number one Skybox, and this is 5 years ago, and I was still talking to the guy who had him, $2,000. It's 40,000, and there's 20 seats, $40,000 per game. Now you get
wow.
some sideline passes, your people get to walk down there. I mean, they treat you right. You get some, parking spots.
I wonder, do they have different levels of Skyboxes?
No, they have one level, but his is right on a 50-yard line. And as you
okay.
go out,
they get cheaper.
They get cheaper.
I mean, I, 300 after I said it did seem really low, but I mean, if you're getting 20 people in there, and that's not even including your food and booze, because you got to pay for that separately. I mean, 2,000, that's rich. Jesus.
Yeah. Now you say that
1,000
was
needs to come with hookers and blow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, on that whole other side, I've never sat over on the. I always sat on the side with the great unwashed.
So I sat on the United Club side.
How did you do that? You weren't with the Great Unwashed.
Well, so I never sit with the Great Unwashed because
This is outrageous.
Unless it's like an early September game, I don't go to sporting events if it's cold. I just don't. I have no desire to do that. So I'd rather watch on TV.
I have no interest.
No interest. Football, whatever it is. Baseball, cold baseball game, no thank you. But my buddy, one of my best friends, his family has four season tickets that they've had forever on the United Club side. Not the Skybox, but the United Club side. So you can you have your four seats outside, but you basically have almost a private bathroom that you're only sharing with your one little section. And then you've got indoor area to sit on couches, and they have bars and everything like that. All your concessions inside. So you can sit out there for a period of time. If it gets cold or if it started raining or something, you go inside, you eat, you drink, the game's on the TV. It's no bathroom line. It's just a lot better experience.
Well, that's why if you're on the other side and the weather's lousy, it looks like everybody left on the other side. They actually just went inside.
They just went inside, yeah. They're still there partying and watching the game on TV.
So let's go back to the issue here, though, because we're running out of time. First of all, is the Bears at the Arlington Park location a good idea on its own merit?
Well, yes, sir, I misspoke, Kevin, in that if you go from 65 to 80, do you necessarily run your revenue up by 15%? I don't know that you do. I mean, because I think it's, I don't know how many.
Why
more,
wouldn't you?
Well, because I think that there's only so many people that are going to buy a Skybox at 20 grand a pop. You've already got them.
Well, you might already have the Skybox people, but, I mean, like I said, you could argue that the Bears are the biggest market in the NFL. New York has two teams. LA has two teams. Bay Area did have two teams. One just left, so I guess they have one team.
So you're saying, and you know what, I think you're probably
right. You have 10 million people competing for eight games.
So you're saying that it's exactly linear, that whatever you're getting a seat, be it $200 a seat, you're going to get a $200 for the next 20,000 people.
I don't know what the number is. I don't know if it's the next 20,000 people, if it's the next 40,000 people, if it's only the next 5,000 people. I don't know. That's a good question, but I think it's bigger than what it is right now.
Well, I happen to think you're probably right.
Whatever it is, I think if Notre Dame can sell 80,000 seats a game, although they've had a few that weren't sellouts lately, but if they can sell 80,000 seats a game and half of the competition really stinks, and they're getting premium, you know, good prices for the seats, and it's all bench seating, then I'm pretty sure that the Bears can get 80,000 regularly and get a pretty good price for it in the Chicago area.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think so too. So what I don't understand is, so Arlington Heights, call it 45 minutes out of the city, horrendous traffic if you were to drive out there for a game. There is a train, though. There's a Metra train that goes right in the parking lot. I don't like suburban stadiums, but a lot of cities are doing that. They're in the suburbs in Dallas. They're in New Jersey for the New York teams. I mean, I get it. Is that the right move? I mean, so you attract a Super Bowl or a Final Four? It's out in the suburbs. How does that help Chicago at all?
I would say out of all the suburban locations there are, that with the Metro and everything, and it's right off the expressway. There's two exits. If there ever was a suburban location, it has to be the best one.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, unless you're coming from the south suburbs or something, or northwest Indiana.
I mean, you know, my drill, it should be downtown. I mean, you shouldn't have to build a whole bunch.
Why can't they? I guess my question is I know Soldier Field's a landmark, but why can't they just make that stadium bigger or better?
Field's still a landmark. Didn't they lose landmark status? I remember when they were doing the remodel, which still looks ridiculous on the outside. That there was a problem. They couldn't do it any other way because of the landmark status of Soldier Field. But then once they did damage to the aesthetics of it, didn't they lose the landmark status?
Kevin's right.
There was a big fight about that. I don't know if they ended up
losing it
or not.
I just Googled it, and a Tribune article pops right up from April 2006, so 15 years ago, saying Soldier Field's controversial renovation, which critics dubbed a flying saucer and a fishbowl, has stripped the stadium of its national...
It looks to me like a big toilet seat on top of there, but go ahead.
Yeah, it has stripped the stadium of its National Historic Landmark designation.
I think they'd still have a big PR problem if they renamed it from Soldier Field to, you know, Pepsi Stadium or something.
You're probably right. I mean, maybe that's why they haven't. But I think Kevin's right. Unless there's something that happened after this, they lost their landmark status.
Well, I mean, it's
anyway.
Yeah.
So the location isn't out of bounds. You know, if they wanted to tear it all the way down and build a new stadium now, they could do that. You know, we already know how bad the logistics of that are, but it's doable because they used Champaign for their home games for what, two seasons?
Yep.
Well, I've gone to these things and various times with the great unwashed side, so I never had a parking place. It's brutal. They won't let cabs near the place, back when there were cabs. You have to walk to the Jackson L stop.
It is awful. Yeah, it's awful.
It's awful.
It's an awful place to get to, but at least it's close.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but we're sitting here and saying, okay, well, that's a problem. So where else? Is there something on the west side? Is there something, you know, what else would be accessible?
But
I think you got to start asking those questions and then stack that up against Arlington Heights. And just say, if you're doing strategy for the Bears and you're trying to look down the road for where they're going to be located, is Arlington Heights as good as it gets for them, or are there other alternatives they should be exploring?
I would say that they should have gone where they should have gone day one. They should be in a south loop on a piece of property that's vacant and where people can park downtown, can go right from work on a night game, and you should have a couple of trained people movers to get people from the parking place to the stadium. Where you have parking down there, but if you want to leave your car downtown, you can hop a streetcar, and you're 3 minutes away.
Do you think they're going to move to Arlington Heights? Or do you think this is a negotiating
ploy? It's a negotiating ploy.
Kevin, what do you think?
I think they're going to land in Arlington Heights.
That would be something.
Who's going to give them the money?
I think ultimately it's going to do that because working with the city is going to be too difficult for. Well, let me rephrase that. I think if Arlington Heights will welcome them, then they're going to land in Arlington Heights.
Well, is Arlington Heights going to come up with the money?
And it will prove to be too difficult for them.
Should we buy property in Arlington Heights so it goes way up?
They're going to do it in such a way where it's self-contained, I bet. So you think the state?
Yeah, they'll want to build out a whole entertainment complex there.
All right. So the thing is going to be
and something that is an entertainment complex year round.
Okay.
Yep,
so it's,
you're exactly right.
It's going to be $2 billion. Now the Bears don't have $2 billion. Now, do you think the state can come up with $1.5 billion right now when they're broke for these guys?
No, state can't. That is a problem, isn't it?
Well,
funds directed to that is. You know, if that's the case, they're going to wind up in Northwest Indiana.
Well,
they floated that one out there once upon a time too, and that didn't get any traction.
All right, so the city of Gary came up with a bunch of money for the rail yards. What are those guys, Manny? The rail cats. The owner went around to all the preachers and got the preachers behind it about how much it's going to be for tax revenue. That thing has been a loser since day one. The people in, where is it, not Brighton Park, it's not Burbank, where's the soccer stadium, Eddie?
They play at Soldier Field now, but it was in Bridgeview.
Yeah, total loser.
Toyota Park, yeah.
For the people in Bridgeview. So now we've had two right close. Is Arlington Heights ready to take this hit? I mean, maybe they are.
Good question.
All right, Kevin, take care of yourself, bud. We'll talk about it next week.
The difference is it's the Bears, and the Bears actually have a chance to generate whatever the revenue model says they're supposed to generate.
Yeah, I wouldn't compare the Bears to
a
fire or anything else.
Say it has a chance. It doesn't mean it's going to be a good deal. It just means it has a chance. All right, I got to go hit the exercise bike and listen to you guys with Carl.
Oh, God, SP Futures down 15, NASDAQ Futures down 14. We've sunk here a little bit. We'll be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates, and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You could reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here. Hello, everyone. Thanks, Tom Mowney. This is Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 18. NASDAQ futures down 26. NASDAQ was up when we came in. And the S&Ps were like even. So, in somewhat of a degradation here. Kyle, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
In all your years of staring at the markets and stuff, not as bad as I do, but pretty much almost as bad, have you ever seen more shenanigans driving prices in totally opposite directions than maybe the logic put them in the last 2 days?
No. except, with one exception, and that is the insanity and BS surrounding Lehman.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if I know that was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, right?
But much closer than that, yeah.
Well, so, you know, there was the Veloukis report, which, by the way, done by the folks out of Chicago, very well-respected law firm, that concluded, and I reported on this at the time, nobody paid any attention to it, nobody cared, that Citibank factually knew Lehman was bankrupt several weeks before it blew up in September, and the reason that they factually knew is that Lehman attempted a reverse repo with them, a tri-party repo, came to them with collateral, Citi said, that's garbage, what else do you have? And the answer was nothing.
I've heard that story from like two or three people, two or three different banks. I think the insiders knew.
Well, this isn't a story.
Yeah,
this was forensic report.
No, I didn't mean to disparage it. But I'm saying I've heard that from a few other people have brought that up, and you're right.
Here's the thing. That also meant that the New York Fed desk knew because a tri-party repo was held by the New York Fed.
We're very early in the segment here this morning, but I'm gonna have to ask you. In the mortgage situation, the Fed surely should have known that all that money was coming from Japan and people were doing a carry trade for that stuff. The question is, did they, and yet if you ever went back and looked at them on TV and their stupid interviews, did they know it? It was right in front of their face. Somebody gave them a report and said, look at this horrible stuff that's happening, and they totally ignored it, or they didn't have a clue. It was buried somewhere in the bowels of some guy they never listened to, some analyst. Which is it, Carol? I mean,
This was the thing about the Veloukis report. When you read it,
okay, but I mean, the jump you made was because Citigroup knew about it. You assumed that the Fed knew about it. The question is, did they?
It's documented they knew about it.
Really, at a high level.
Well, that was the central point of the Veloukis report that nobody, and I do mean nobody, wanted to pay attention to, and it was what got me blackballed in a number of major media outlets because I refused to shut up about it. But including the CNBC guys, they won't go anywhere near me anymore. There was a host a few months ago that attempted to book me and was told by corporate, no, you can't do that. And this goes all the way back to the 08-09 time frame.
Well, I'm sure they will never invite Pedro on either, because he asked Janet Yellen about the where was the front running investigation?
Right, exactly. But this was so. What came out of this report was that Lehman had attempted to do this transaction. Tim Geithner, by the way, was running the New York Fed at the time. They are the custody desk for those transactions. Citi told Lehman to go bite it after they presented the collateral that they were going to use for the repo. And Geithner and his pals over there at the New York Fed desk knew this because that's how that works. Okay, that transaction is negotiated and held by the New York Fed. That's the whole point of tri-party repos, is that you know that they will be repaid because the New York Fed is holding the securities. And so not only did Citi know that Lehman was bankrupt, the New York Fed knew that Lehman was bankrupt, and it wasn't speculative. It wasn't, well, we think there's no money. They factually knew that they had no good securities.
Okay, but what I'm trying to get to here, and I'm not disparaging anything you're saying. You know I would never do that. All that's in my mind here is the Chicago flood effort, where somebody knew there was a poke in the Chicago underground, and it never made it up to the mayor's office. Now do we think that Geithner, who I always thought was a total lightweight, do we think that he walked up to Bernanke, whoever it was at the time, and said, look, this is what's going on, or he just thought he could handle it himself and it never went up? I mean, I can't imagine him giving that full report to the full Fed and them just panning the whole thing, but maybe did they? I mean, that's what I'm trying to get.
Well, that we don't know, because, you know, that was never, that is not in the report, whether or not he went to Bernanke and, you know, told him this. But what we do know is that Geithner was made Secretary of the Treasury, right?
Well, we do that all the time. I mean,
I understand that, but I mean, you know, so for his failure, he gets rewarded by being the Treasury Secretary.
Well, Murphy's Law is rampant in the federal.
Look who's our Treasury Secretary now, right?
She went out and got $7 million from the people she's supposed to be regulating.
Right. I mean, you know, yeah, the corruption is ridiculous. This is a pattern that has played out time and time again. And I mean, you look at what's going on right now, the PPI index, you know, it was out a few days ago, is absolutely hideous.
I would come to think of it, after reading parts of excerpts from Geithner's book, I would bet you the first adult beverage, Carl, that his ego thought he could handle it himself, and he never passed it up.
Well, it's entirely possible, sure. I mean, the question, though, becomes how do you? And then, of course, there is also the other side of it, that, you know, Bear Stearns allegedly was ditched as opposed to being bailed out because there were people upset with them over what they did, you know, several years earlier.
Well, plus they were a hugely Yiddish firm. I don't know if that had part to do with it or not.
Well, you know, I mean, what the motivation was, you know, who's exactly sure, right?
Right.
But the point being there that there's, you know, and then Lehman, everybody assumed that the Fed would step in and stop Lehman from collapsing. Of course, that didn't happen, and, you know, and then we got what we got. But one of the things that I thought was most fascinating about this is that there used to be this thing that I watched literally every day as a trader. It's called the Slosh Report. And prior to all the QE games, it told you how much in free cash the Federal Reserve from the New York desk was putting in or taking out of the banking system on a daily basis. And it came out about 11 o'clock in the morning. And it was an absolutely essential, if you were trading actively, it was an essential thing to look at, because it gave you the direction of money flow in and out of the banking system. Okay, and I mean, you know, down to the $1 billion. I mean, it was insanely.
Now, first of all, you don't deserve that number. You're just a regular citizen. You're not part of the
income. Well, but you know, but there it was, published by the New York desk every day.
It's not all there anymore, is it?
Yeah, but it doesn't mean anything anymore because of all the QE gains.
Okay.
Okay, so I mean, but it used to be, before that, it was the data that would tell you what sort of balancing transactions were taking place within the Federal Reserve, you know, banking system. That's the primary function, is, you know, you've got an extra $1 billion in this bank versus that bank, and that's, you know, that's the payments clearing function that is the real reason for a Fed to exist. That balancing takes place.
Just to educate me a little bit and the listeners, from what I remember way, way back in the day, before this QE, before this other crap was around, Wasn't it on Monday and Wednesday, the New York Fed, was it like at 10 o'clock in the morning, they did their open market transactions like right on rain. And that's what you're talking about, correct?
Right, exactly.
Well, that exactly. I mean, right now, who knows what they're doing when, and when they could be doing it at night. They don't care, right? I mean, it's...
Well, it's that, and then the other problem is that those open market transactions that are done there are such a small piece of the total now that I'm not sure that it would actually move the needle one way or another.
But the information that was out there for all to see clearly is no longer there. That you have to know that they're calling Jamie Dimon to do a mortgage by that afternoon, and if you're not on that inside move, you're not getting anything.
Well, yeah, and you'll be wrong if you try to just follow the slosh numbers because they're doing this other stuff that is so much larger that trying to use that as a signaling device is it's a waste of time now. But it used to be one of the primary things, and one of the things that just blew me out of the water was that shortly after the blow-up, Bernanke shows up for his Humphrey Hawkins stuff on Capitol Hill and tells the House that he was adding liquidity into the system, into the maw of that collapse in 2008. Okay? That was a lie. In fact, on the day it happened, he took $60 billion out.
Do you think any of us will ever... In the midst of that mess, you alluded to it a little bit, there used to be, quite a few, Salomon Brothers was no longer. There were relatively, matter of fact, Bill Cohen was on yesterday, and he was talking about being a member of the French place, Laser Fairs or something, or what was the name of that place that he was a part of?
Maddie, I don't remember that one.
Maddie, it's in his bio. Would you mind looking? I remember them, when I first went on the trading floor, they were pretty big. Two names, Les something something, but it was a French name. They went out. But I mean, the Goldmans of the world, the people that we gave all the money to pay off, or we gave the money to the insurance company to pay off Goldman, there clearly was favoritism along the line here. I mean, it all, because what's his name came from Goldman. You're like an ex-Marine, you never actually become an ex-Marine. I mean, once you leave Goldman, and clearly, those guys were favored all the way through. And I don't know if they were in any... They probably were in a little better shape than Bear Stearns or... I don't think they ever had the off... But, this is what... If I have to look back at my career, Carl, it's almost like I want to, take a bat to my head because there was a lot of little things that were around that if I just would have been more sinister in my thought process, I could have made a boatload of money. I mean, here's a weirdo story. When I was at Pullman, Robin was the chairman, so we go to a massive deal with Bank America because they wanted Pullman's to borrow more from them and not just the place in Philadelphia. So we go to the Metropolitan Club for dinner, and then there's a bus over to Fiddler on the Roof with Anthony Quinn. It was an unbelievable evening these guys paid for. Well, a couple years later, I go to the trading floor, I'm playing softball, and a Bank of America team comes out. They didn't have any uniforms. They had to borrow a bat and a ball for batting practice. I'm thinking, something's wrong with this bank. Did I short it? No. they went from like 18 to 5 in the next 2 weeks or whatever it was. And the same thing, we had a client that way before this, I don't think it was 2006, but of course he will go nameless, terrific guy. He was in one of the Bear Stearns, I'm going to say, off-balance sheet places.
One of those things they were doing.
And he lost $1 million, I'm going to say, either was real early 2007 or late 2006. Did I say, first of all, I wouldn't trade in that kind of information, but did I say, something's got to be wrong with this Bear Stearns. I better buy some puts on this place. Did I? No. Even though I'm sitting there going, boy, that would be the trade. But how do I explain that to people that I bought puts on Bear Stearns? Well, I think they're going under. how do you even... It was such a, but it definitely was sitting there. And obviously, if I knew that, an awful lot of people that are closer to the action had to know a hell of a lot more than me, enough to trade in. And they probably don't have the morals I do.
I was, in the summer of 07, I was building a short position in Countrywide. And it got to be quite a large short position. And everybody and the brother telling me that, oh, no, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. Well, as it turned out, I wasn't wrong. I was very right.
Well, you could have done that just based on the, was that the guy with the CEO that would come out with the incredible tan?
Yeah, that was Mozilla. That was Mozilla, yeah. And I mean, he was the prototype for Orange Man Bad.
Well, plus he had the shirt that was always the dark blue with the white collar, which I never could fathom that style, but he was into that. So Maddie, the guy's got this incredible dark tan that was, you know, the glowed bronze. And then he had the white collar and the navy shirt, and I'm going, something's wrong with this place. But I didn't get the short position like you did. But now, did you end up all right? Because they got bought by who? They got bought by Bank of America or Wells Fargo, right?
Yeah, they got taken out. But I mean, it was an incredibly profitable trade. It was one of the better ones I've made in my career. So.
Good for you. I mean, hopefully you weren't like me and you got in like 4 months early.
Well, there was some pain involved because Mozilla was known for showing up on CNBC and hyping how he was going to own the subprime world when all the dust had settled. Wow. And of course, what happened instantly whenever he made one of those appearances was the stock went up $5.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, it was sitting there watching this, going, "Oh man, if I'm wrong about this."
Yeah, I mean, boy, it's a. You know, it's a tough world, you know, bucking a trend like that, and it's real. The one mistake you can make, I mean, if you after the show, I pick up, you know, somebody sends me an email, which nobody ever would, and I wouldn't act on it, but say, you know what, IBM, they're really cooking their books, which I don't think IBM's ever done, and if I sit there and go, if I really know it's true, and I shorted it like 9 o'clock, it's so arrogant to think at 9:15 everybody's going to come to the same conclusion you do. You're lucky if they ever do it. If they do, it's probably 6 months from now, right?
Right. Well, that's the thing. Is I mean, you know, if you're right about stuff like that, it's, you know, it works out really well. If you're wrong, it works out very, very badly.
Right. And it usually doesn't work out at the time frame you think it should either.
Right. Oh yeah. No. I mean, it's one of the challenges of trying to, you know, get in front of stuff like that. But what I see going on now. Is just, I mean, you know, it's interesting to watch just the last few days. I mean, you look at the industrials, you look at like, you know, U.S. Steel, GE, Dow, you know, the industrial firms, right? And the last few days they're getting pounded, and yet Amazon is, you know, is going exactly the opposite direction, right?
Well, I have a...
And here's the thing, you look at, you know, you tell me how inflation and supply line inflation... helps Bezos' little empire. I don't think so.
Well, any kind of inflation probably helps him.
Because he can raise. Well, that's the point. I mean, cost push doesn't help anybody.
Well, if it, how do I put this right? Inflation is, as Milton Friedman used to say.
Yeah, it's always been everywhere, a monetary phenomenon.
No, but he also said when it first started, it's such a good thing for a lot of people. That
right.
They don't realize that it's taking a shot out of the rest of the people, and by the time it catches up, the first brush of it is usually pretty good. And I was talking earlier about I went into some restaurant and got something that was worth $5 and paid 36. You know, it was like, right now it's gleeful for some. I mean, it really.
Yeah, it is, but it's, you know, it's interesting how when you look at the charts of some of these, you know, some of these firms, from a technical perspective, there's a heck of a lot of damage being done here right now.
Well, I was hot as a pistol for a while, and that of course always ends, Carl. When I do a lot of earnings plays and stuff, right? I don't take they're volatility plays. You know, they'll say, okay,
right.
Look, the straddle says that the stock's going to move $10, but if I do this time spread, calendar spread, I can absorb a $15 move. You know,
right.
So it's an intelligent, trade, but it doesn't mean I'm going to be right if it moves 25, right? So I probably have six of these on, and now the six I just put on, it's not my finest hour. And the listeners know that I'll tell you when I'm doing good, and I'll tell you. But the weird part is the three I'm wrong to the downside on, where the stocks are getting annihilated, where I got like an 80 spread on and the stock's trading 70, are all companies that I think are pretty darn good and are going to be around forever. The ones
right.
that I did at 80 that are trading 90 are stocks that probably should be 10. I mean, it's exactly the opposite. I don't, on the six, the three I'm losing because they're down, I think are good companies, they make money and actually pay a dividend. The ones that I'm losing to the upside are companies that don't make money, never pay a dividend, or trade 100 times revenue. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, I know, and it's like, going through my board, I've been out of town now for a week and a half, is doing the Yellowstone Half Marathon.
Oh, good for you.
And it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. I mismanaged the major hill on the course, and it blew up my time for the back half of the race, but that's my fault.
You were aware, I assume, that
you're still upright and alive, so that's good.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I finished it, and my time was nothing to write home about. On the other hand, it was 15th out of 76 in my age division, so I guess I shouldn't complain too much.
Nice, that's awesome.
Well, there's only 76 guys alive over 110.
Well, you know, there you go. Thanks a lot, guys. But my kid met me out there, and we both ran it, and then had some nice time hiking the trails and stuff like that. And it was actually kind of amusing because same afternoon, races, of course, they always do these things early in the morning, and it was cold. I'd rather have cold than hot. But we get done, and we go back to the campsite, get cleaned up, get a shower, because of course you stink like an ape when you're done. And then go in town, get some food, then we go out to the park and we put several more miles under our shoes hiking up and seeing stuff.
Good Lord!
I have a question for you. If you come in the southern gate between there and Old Faithful, don't you cross the divide like three times? I mean, you're up there.
Yeah, you do. And there's like, you see the first sign, you go Continental Divide, right? Then about 10 minutes later, you see another one, Continental Divide.
You go over three times, don't you?
Yeah, you go back and forth like three or four times. We came in that gate, and then the race itself was just outside the West Yellowstone Gate at West Yellowstone. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I think is so interesting, you know, that's one of those little towns that, but for the park, would not exist.
Oh, without a doubt. I actually stayed there in the wintertime one time, and we snowmobiled in.
$15 for a hamburger, dude.
Oh, well, in the wintertime, it's not like that. Well, it was a long time ago.
$15 for a hamburger, Jesus.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I'm not kidding. You want to talk about inflation, okay? I mean, all through the West, gas prices are crazy. There wasn't anything under $3 anywhere. Okay, once you got out of Kansas towards Colorado and further, all those crazy governors out there with their taxes, it looks like Chicago, right, in terms of fuel prices. But the thing that just blew me away was, I'm not kidding, $15 for a hamburger in West Yellowstone.
Well, Carl, I'm going to say I went out there this long time ago. We went out skiing, and we stayed in Jackson, right?
There's
all these gas stations and, like drive-ins that are all closed. And I go,
right,
what's the story with those things? Oh, in the summertime, 1.5 million people come through here because it's the southern gateway to Yellowstone. West Yellowstone is obviously the west side. We went skiing at Big Sky and drove down that way and stayed in West Yellowstone and came in on snowmobiles from that side because you're much closer to the geyser fields and stuff if you're going on the west side than the south. I mean, the south is a good, 30 miles to Old Faithful? It's a ways. But in the west side, but there's how many motels? And there was like two of them open in the wintertime, and the rest of them are just closed waiting for the summer. In the summer, I hear it's absolutely bumper to bumper in all the national parks this year because nobody wants to go anywhere else. They're going with the family. Everybody's driving.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy going into the park. I mean, having a bison in the middle of the road does tend to slow traffic down.
Well, quick question, since I'm interested in it, I'm assuming that listeners are as well. I thought they didn't let people, essentially get out of their cars and start hiking in the summer. I mean, when it got so crowded, I thought you had to stay on the road.
Well, there's pull-offs and places. I mean, there's quite a lot in Yellowstone and in the Tetons, too. The only problem with the Tetons is my daughter has a pup and had her with her, and absolutely none of the trails are dog friendly in the Tetons at all. Zero. It's completely banned for your dog.
Well, there's bears
out on any of this stuff.
Yeah, there's bears and stuff. They don't want dogs out there.
Oh, by the way, I actually saw one during the race.
Wow.
There was and a number of the people that were running were actually crazy enough to stop and get their cell phones out.
You gotta be kidding me.
And I'm like, you're joking. right? That's a bear. Okay, fine. There's plenty of other people, and I'm faster than them, so it's all good.
Well, there you go.
The idiots that I was with on the snowmobile trek, we bought rent our own snowmobiles. All these bison are out there in all this deep snow. These guys walked out next to them. Bison turns and runs at you. You're dead.
Are they still endangered?
Or
are
they?
No. I'll tell you what. If they are, I'd like to know how, because they were everywhere out there.
Manny, there's a big herd out west here by the. What's the? It's in what's the county just west of us?
DeKalb?
Yeah, there's a big bison herd out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't think they're anywhere near endangered. I think
they were for a while.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
So they brought them back, which that's good.
I'm gonna say there's.
Well, you can get bison burgers out there. They're, you know, it's an upcharge, but if you want your burger and bison, you can have it that way.
Is it still more than beef?
Yeah, but it's tasty. I like it.
I've had it before. It is good.
You can also get Rocky Mountain oysters out there.
No, thank you.
Well, you know.
But, yeah, well, Yellowstone is... I've known some people that I've never done this. I'm not big on riding horses. I like to bet on them. But have flown in and stay at a ranch east of the park and ride in. We're nowhere near where any... The park is so big. There's areas you can't even get into by car. So they ride in, and they said that is just spectacular. I mean, it just...
You have to, one thing you have to watch out, Yellowstone in particular, not so much on the southern side and the eastern side, but on the western side, is that... Anything that looks like it's not actual ground, you know, it's got that's got a kind of a white or any kind of color to it, stay off of it, because it's very likely that there is thermal. It's that underneath there is thermal, and not a little either.
Well, that's the beauty of the wintertime, Carl. You can see all that. It's
well, yeah.
We walked down to a spot by the Yellowstone River, and I stuck my hand in the river, and it's rushing by. And it was, you know, if it wasn't rushing, it would have been frozen. I mean, it was that cold. And it couldn't have been 2 feet away. The mud is boiling.
Yeah.
But it's really something. I mean, the topography. I mean, I don't know how you'd see that in the summer, but, I mean, those guys, you know, the one geyser field, you walk out on the wood, and how many of them are out there? I mean, it's nothing but boiling water and geysers, and the stuff's going off, and you're like, holy bleep.
And mud pots all over the place. Yeah, it's really cool.
SP Futures down 30 now. NASDAQ Futures on 81. It's not looking good. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 29.50. These are the Septembers. NASDAQ futures down, stuff's moving all over the places. 79 to 80, depending on the second you look at it. Individual stocks in the Dow and Amgen down 3, but every stock in the Dow is down. The Dow's down 332, the futures. This is after being down, we'll get the yesterday number right now. I reviewed yesterday. Dow was down 210. Dow's been getting hammered all week. S&P was down 1 yesterday. NASDAQ was up 121, but everything's down today. Over in Europe, we've got DAX is now down 215. It's 1.4%. By the way, Chairman Bullard, or Chairman, whatever group he's from, I think, is he from, hey, check it. Is he St. Louis? Bullard, he just, now he's saying he thinks the rate hike will come in the end of 22, which in one day now, we've gone from the end of 23 to 22. I'm going to say it happens this year, but that's just me. FTSE down 105, 1.5%.
He is the St. Louis Fed president.
Yeah, I remember him.
Pretty good.
CAC around down 69, that's 1.1%. Over Asia, these guys have closed, so they're not still moving. Nikkei down 54, that's 0.2%. Shanghai down 50 cents, call that flat. Hang Seng, however, bucking the trend, they're up 242.8%. Bonds, they're unchanged at 1.51. The Bund unchanged at minus 0.19. Japan unchanged at positive 0.06. UK positive 0.78, they're actually up 1 basis point. Oil, down 86 cents, now 70.18. We'll see if they hold 70. It's 1.2%. They were like $74, what, on Tuesday maybe? Let's say, Wednesday maybe? Brent down 86 cents, 72.22. They got to 75, I think. Natural gas down 5 cents, 3.19. RBOB down 2 cents, 2.11. I don't think it'll make it through the gas station by Sunday, do you mean? Gold up $7. Silver up 33. The 26.19, this is either dead cat bounces here because they were way down yesterday. Gold is down like $80. Copper down a penny, 4.16. Platinum up 11. Platinum got hammered yesterday as China was pulling the metals out of their closet and selling them to people yesterday, and that's what drove the price. I think there's been a liquidator all along. That's just my opinion. Bitcoin down 344. 37,422, so they were 40,000. They touched on Monday or Tuesday, so they're down from that, but still hanging in there. Matty, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. A significant crash on I-80. This is on the eastbound side near Joliet, right around Highway 30 there. There's a crash that is causing significant delays. It says expect delays of up to an hour trying to navigate around this crash. So it must be significant, but it's blocking I-80 on the eastbound side right at US 30. So keep that in mind if you're in the southwest suburbs near Joliet. We also have a disabled vehicle on the Tri-State southbound between Mile Long Bridge and 87th Street that's blocking the right lane and causing us congestion on the Tri-State. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Normal traffic volumes there. Same for Lakeshore Drive. That earlier tree that fell on the northbound side at LaSalle that was blocking the right lane, that apparently has been cleared. So Lakeshore Drive is open back up and looking good. Steady traffic on the Stevenson and Eisenhower, but no accidents to report. That earlier crash on the Kennedy at Armitage is all clear, but some significant congestion on the Kennedy near O'Hare. Edens is all quiet. Off the expressways, we have a crash out in the western suburbs. Route 59, looks like, of course, it just went away on my screen. Maybe it's been cleared. So
maybe Scotty beamed the wreck up.
We won't talk about that one, but there's a crash in Carroll Stream, Army Trail Road at Bloomingdale. That's causing delays. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, the rain seems to have tapered off. It's still overcast downtown, but we're expecting the sun to come out a little bit later this morning. And then it's going to be hot and humid. It'll be a high of 87 in the city, low to mid-90s out in the suburbs with lots of sunshine. Right now it is cloudy and 68 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and hot with a high of 117. Right now it's clear and 94. In sports, Cubs shut out the Mets last night, 2-0. They're back at home tonight for a rare Friday night game against the Marlins. That's the team, of course, that knocked the Cubs out of the playoffs last year. White Sox were blown out down in Houston. They lost 10-2. Diamondbacks were blown out by the Giants, 10-3. Chief.
Carl, is Matty allowed to use the word taper, or is that the Fed's reserve word? No.
Well, I don't know. You know, it's I would be willing to bet that and have bet the way that really matters, right? Which is, you know, you put some stuff out there in the market that the Fed is going to get forced this year into backing away from this BS about, oh, you know, we're not doing anything until 2023 or whatever have you.
So I'm not going to be able to bet you, obviously, because that would be my bet as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, frankly, I've been on the the other side of that argument for an awfully long time, that deflation is inevitable, because you simply aren't going, especially in areas of things like housing, that you aren't going to be able to maintain this, and if you continue to try to do it, eventually you're going to break things that are important. You're going to get civil unrest at a mass scale, because when people have nothing to lose, they tend to lose it. And dispossessing people of a place to live is a great way to have that kind of a thing happen in any society.
Well, Carl, why? I always like to talk to you about these things, because I also want to talk to you about Juneteenth.
Good Lord.
Hey, before we can we take a second, since we've been talking about Yellowstone, we'll ask Maddie. Maddie, Yellowstone is somewhat unique. It was our first national park, correct? And I think it was voted as being a national park, and no one in Congress had ever seen it when they voted yes. Is that true, Carl?
As far as I know, yes. And in addition, the Tetons were not a separate thing. It was all part of the same deal when it was originally set up.
Well, nobody lived out there. It was an explorer basically reported, you got to see this place. But it was
Oh, yeah, no. How would you like to be one of the original people who went out there and never see anything like that, and you end up stepping in a mud pot and boiled to death?
Well, the good news is, since you're so high up, boiling temperature is lower.
Yeah, okay.
So it might only be 190 degrees instead of 217 or whatever the hell boiling is. But yeah, the interesting part, it was formed, what, by an explosion? The whole thing blew off, right?
Well, yeah, there's a caldera that's essentially the entire area. And it will blow again, probably not for another half million years or something like that. But when it does, and it will, it's going to ruin the agricultural production capacity of this country all the way through the breadbasket. And the ash fall will likely reach all the way down to Florida.
Well, can't you pick up, if you know what you're doing? I couldn't. If you do a soil sample and go down far enough in North Carolina, you can find remnants of that ash, correct?
Absolutely. And that it has happened before is historical fact.
Well, it would be, Chicago would be Yellowstone if you basically took the top, 200 feet of ground off it, right? You actually would have.
Yeah, I mean, what most people don't understand is the last time this thing blew up, it dropped something like 20 feet.
Yeah.
Of ash all the way east to like Michigan.
But how much did it take off Yellowstone itself?
Good Lord, I have no idea. But I mean, that's the thing is that caldera. If you get any kind of a hint that that sort of a thing is coming, go sit on top of it with a big bottle of booze and just let it happen, because it will be much better to go like that than to freeze and starve to death.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a. Where we were talking about a little bit about Juneteenth, but when I see this stuff come, I'm starting to get a whole different view of the world. I don't have any issue with people. I mean, how we could have written the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and somehow not outlawed slavery in there? I don't understand how the hell that could be. The same people who wrote those words should have realized that slavery was not part of that. Of that movement, but they didn't. Okay, so history is history, and I don't have any issue with celebrating the fact that somebody said, "Hey, this is enough's enough," and stopped it. But what I do have is, we're reaching a point here economically where we've got issues, and we also have a big separation in what regular people, their jobs are. I'll use the term, I won't say regular, I'll say non-public employees, what they think a job is, and where a public employee thinks a job is. And I don't know, I mean, like I say, the exchange closes, so you can't do anything like six times a year. But I'm going to say that Maddie's firm doesn't pay any attention to these, I'm going to say, additional holidays. The idea that the federal people need another day off after the COVID situation, when other people work, Saturdays, Sundays, and how many hours a week, the idea that a certain class of people works only 40 hours a week, unless they get overtime, gets 12 days off, gets paid sick leave, oh, by the way, gets a pension, all this stuff. Do they have any idea how the rest of the world lives? I mean, normally I wouldn't care, Carl, but it's just reaching the point where you've got people like Kamala Harris and Biden, and I'm not saying that just happen to be Democrats, that have never gotten a paycheck except through their son or through their wife's book or something, some scam deal, that they've never gotten a paycheck out of the government in like years and years and years. I don't think they even understand, Carl. Do they have any idea what I'm talking about?
No, I don't think they do. And the idea, you know, that we have this, we've allowed the creeping of this to turn into a mess. And one of the things that is quite interesting is we put in place the civil service system, which is what most of your federal employees are under right now, as a solution to the problem of the former system, which was patronage-based. So basically, everybody that works for the federal government, when a new administration came in, they all got fired. Okay, I mean, that was just... literally everybody got fired.
It happened to my uncle. He was a policeman for the county, and when Richard Ogilvie came in, he was like the first Republican. He fired all Democrats.
And exactly. Yeah. And that used to be, you know, at the federal level, that's how it used to work. We put the civil service system in because we thought that was a terrible thing. Okay, and so we did that. Well, what we ended up creating is a system where, short of showing up drunk at work, you can't be fired. All right. Now there are exceptions. So I have a friend of mine who I've known for a long time. She was due to be able to retire with full pension and everything in about another 3 years. Biden comes in, and everybody who was in her area that was the quote-unquote wrong way and was close enough to retirement got forced retired early. So she was forced out and now is, you know, is off doing her own thing. But she wanted that extra, you know, 3 years or so because, of course, you know, that would have increased her pension payouts.
Yeah, but she's way better off doing something else in the 3 years in the meantime than she is the extra $50 she'd make as a pension, and I spend her pension.
Oh, no, I understand that. I'm just saying that the thing is that short of something like that, where you're in the, you know, the right bracket, they literally can't get rid of you unless you do something that, you know, that is a blatantly obvious violation of, you know, the law or something like that. So, you know, if you show up drunk at work, I suppose you could be fired, but short of that, probably not.
During the World War II, my mom was hired by the Quartermaster Corps, and her job was terminations and resignations. And she was there for like 2.5, 3 years.
That sounds fun. Jesus.
Well, she says they never fired anybody, and you couldn't quit. Because.
So what'd she do all day?
She said the whole time they were there, they had one person that was carrying a gun that they found a way to get rid of. That was it. In 3 years.
Yeah.
But she had to go work every day. Had to be there on time. Had to make sure she got back on break. This is the dumbest thing she ever heard. That was her job. She kept trying to get transfer out into some areas where you did something. Now, my aunt, her sister, they applied on the same day. She was in spaghetti, macaroni, and noodles, where she was procuring pasta, essentially, to put in the meals ready to eat for whatever they used to call them back then for the soldiers. So she at least was doing something.
Yeah.
That's why.
It's unreal. But it reaches a point, Carl, where even these guys have to know, let's make it a holiday, but we really don't have to give people tomorrow off if they've been off for a year and a half. I mean, really.
Well, I mean, take a look at the insanity that came out of this, okay? So the CDC is having an emergency meeting to deal with this myocarditis thing that's showing up in young people that took the shots, okay? Then they announced, we're not going to hold it because it fell on Juneteenth.
Yeah.
So we're going to push it back a week. All right, so you're telling me that if you have information and evidence that people are being severely harmed, their hearts being screwed up, that you're not going to have the emergency meeting, which you declared as an emergency, because it happens to fall on a holiday?
That started yesterday.
That started yesterday. So what is wrong with, you know, I mean, come on. This is the kind of government corruption. I don't care what you're doing. If you've got an emergency, you've got an emergency. Well, we're not going to put the fire out in the forest tomorrow. Today. We'll do it tomorrow because today's a federal holiday. I mean, are you serious?
Yeah. I have a family's all, when I say it's messed up age-wise because there were so many people in my grandmother's family that she was the oldest, and her she has sons and daughters that are older than her brothers and sisters, which, you know, that don't happen too often. So her youngest brother's kid is maybe a year older than me, and I was nowhere near the oldest one in our group. Anyway, he retired. He was the head of the union in Columbus, Ohio, that mans the power stations. I mean, they're not plumbers. I don't know what they are, but it must be some kind of engineer, I guess, Carl, that does all the big pumps and the steam and all that stuff. And he was ahead of it. He said, remember, we had a negotiation. We never struck because we realized how important we were. We always went to the guy and said, look, we know times are tough. We can handle it too, whatever it was. He goes, there's never been an issue. And so he goes, I retired and I've got this pension. And he says, you know, I know I could have made more in private industry, but that was the deal. You know, you worked here for 30 years and you got a decent pension. And I said, you know, Jan, I love you like a brother, bud, but you got to do this for me. Nobody, I don't think, beholds that you shouldn't get this. I said, you got to understand that if it's 20 years from now and we both last, and you talk about pensions at a party, you're the only one there that's going to even know what they are. I mean, it is only people that work for a city now that are getting them. Nobody else. I mean, there's got to be. Are there any regular pension companies left?
I don't think so.
Well, the airlines. I mean,
well, yeah, but you know what? That's all right. So that's a red herring, though, because you look at the people that had pensions with the airlines the last time they went through trouble that got screwed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I mean, and they got screwed bad.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, yeah, they're only in government employment is there, you know, is there alleged protection from this? Well, you know, this has been supposedly litigated, and, you know, they said, oh, no, that's sacrosanct. You can't, you know, the state constitution prohibits you actually fixing this.
Well, lawyers can argue both sides. Somebody, Manny, we first started the show. One of the listeners sent me two sides of the legal argument. And one of them, it's in the Constitution, so it's right there. It says you can't diminish any. I think it was you can't diminish anybody's pension.
Correct. That's essentially the yeah.
But the second lawyer, his opinion was if he was going to go argue it, his point was the clause means nothing because it doesn't name somebody who's supposed to pay it. It doesn't say. You can't diminish, the city of Oak Lawn can't diminish somebody's pension. And if they're broke, the state has to pony up and take care of it. It doesn't say that. So the attorney says it's a useless clause. If it doesn't say, what are you supposed to do? Send out checks that just keep bouncing?
There's the other side of that, which is that you can't get blood from a stone, right?
Yeah. So his point was.
So why don't we challenge that in Illinois then?
Well,
someone needs to. I mean, that, well, it, obviously.
Well, you're going to take it to the Illinois Supreme Court that's under the same pension?
Right.
Well, good point. But we all know that's the only way that this state in particular can turn its fortunes around is settling on some deal to settle, you know, I don't know, pennies on the dollar on pensions, and that's it. And move everyone to 401k, and that's it.
Well, I would start what's
happened in the private sector is that for those that blew up, they went into PBGC.
Right.
Which, can by law, can only pay out from assets that are there. So there's the limiting factor on that, and that's how the airline guys, you know, got hosed. But in the public sector, there is no provision to do that. So if it collapses, it's just dead.
Well, the airline sector, I'm going to, a little bit of history, Carl, and I'm 99% sure I'm right on this. Back when Pullman got taken over, which was 78, 79, every one of the companies that had that kind of pension of what do they used to call them? The defined benefit. Every one of those things was totally flush because people were getting 12, 13% on money in the bank that they had budgeted to be like 3%.
Oh yeah, well that's the upside of an inflationary spike that drives up rates, right?
Well, yeah, but this one isn't doing that. But my point is when Pullman got taken over, the ERISA laws allow a new firm to recalculate and buy everybody an annuity on what they already have, and essentially take the excess. So Wheelabrator Fry was able to take $40 million, which in those days was a real lot of money, out of the Pullman Pension Fund. And I'm going to say that for United Airlines, picking on them because Chicago's homegrown, I'm going to say that the reason why United Airlines became UAL Inc. was because UAL Inc. could raid the pension fund. Because if Pullman was that oversubscribed, I can only imagine how much old. And I'm thinking they raided all that. So.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that, you know, this was just a victim of circumstance. They did raid. I mean, corporations did do that sort of thing and reorganize and raid those funds.
Well, okay, I was trying to head this with regarding the Fed. I said when they start talking about this, these interest rates are going to start creeping up, Carl. And now the point is, why is it that people? This is a question I've been wanting to ask you for an hour now. Why is it that everybody on TV refuses to acknowledge the fact that if and when there is inflation, I do say that if and when, that it means the Fed, they're no longer in control. It means they blew it. I mean, when you start running up federal funds rates 4% and 5% in 2 and 3 months like we did in the 70s, it wasn't a question of the Fed being in control. It was because they were so totally out of control they were chasing it. And yet, the respect that's given to these people, oh no, we're only going to have an interest rate rise if the Fed sees it true, and they're not going to do it for another year and a half. God's sake, Carl, if the inflation is 8%, do we really think our population is going to invest money at like a minus 8% or 3? Or what are we at now? We're at minus 3%, right? If inflation is 5, and the Fed's paying out 2 on, well, say 20 years, do we really think that, you know, people are investing now at minus 3? Are they going to be stupid enough to be minus 7 or 8? I mean, do they really think that?
Well, apparently some people do because they're doing it. But I mean, it's you know, the real problem with things like that is, and as I've pointed out to folks for a long time, what happens when, let's say, the 10-year, you know, goes from 1.5 to, you know, 5%, is that, well, guess what? That's 3.5 times 10 years, and that is the destruction of value of the existing bonds.
Well, they'll be down. I mean, it's almost, nobody even knows what I'm talking about, Carl, when I say when I started the business, the bond, the 30-year bond that everybody traded was, because there's always one signature bond that you're allegedly trading, right, for the future.
Right.
I think, Carl, it was an 8.5% bond. And if I recall correctly, the low tick was 66.5 of value. So that means, that puts the market rate at what, 13, 12 and a half?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I mean, the thing was trading 66, for God's sake. I mean, it was like, I guess I should have bought some there, eh? I mean, and imagine if you still had, well, it was more than 30 years ago, but imagine if you had that little puppy in your safety deposit box for, you gave somebody 100 grand and they're going to pay you 13 grand a year for 30 years? Good Lord.
Well, that was one of the things that, you know, I wish I'd had money in the early 80s.
Me too, yeah.
And been able to do that, because clipping that coupon for the next 30 years, holy moly.
Yeah. I mean, that's an well, not to mention, it probably went to trade at, what, 125? Would have been a hell of a...
Oh, yeah, but I mean, but even not do it, you know, even just sitting on it, you just take the coupons.
Well, I mean, I know the difference between, you know, I mean, my parents didn't really get hurt because, you know, that my mom was a saver. So she, you know, she always got, I'm going to say, inflation plus a little bit interest in the bank. When inflation was 8, she was getting 10.
Right.
You know, I mean, I say she did them all the banking. And my stepfather always kept pace with inflation at his work because he was one of the executives. They never went crazy on it, but I'm guessing they at least matched the 10% a year. I was one of the bumps at Pullman where I was a junior executive, whatever I was, I got a total of 15% raise in the 3 years I was there. Inflation was probably 28, so I took a 15% pay cut when I was there, and they liked me. I got the max. Meanwhile,
you got hosed.
Well, the unions were, you know what though, Carl? They never got 100%. They got like 80% of the inflation plus their regular stuff. So I'm going to say they barely stayed with it, but at least they stayed with it. Anyway. It's an odd world. Are we going to stay crazy the next week? I mean, we're with the bonds go one way and the gold going the other and everything. This is nuts.
Yeah, I think it's you're starting to see some cracks here, and the bigger issue that's coming up is that it's hitting supply chains, and this is the problem with long term supply chains in an environment where inflation is unstable. Is that go try to price the lumber and labor to frame a house.
Yeah, okay? Good luck.
And what you're going to be told is, by the way, the price today is for immediate delivery. Well, wait a minute, the foundation's not in. I can't do that, or somebody will steal all the wood, right?
Yeah.
And yet, if you say, well, I want it 3 months, it's, sorry, we can't give you a number. Call us back when you're ready for it, and we'll tell you what it is. Well, then how do you price that forward into what you're going to charge a person who buys it?
Well, you can't. Plus, if you use a CPI inflator, they're lying on a CPI, so it doesn't help you at all.
That's the problem.
We should be in the security business guarding everybody's lumber.
I think this is this is where the rubber hits the road when you get an unstable environment like this, is that it starts to create problems throughout the economy, and all of the offshoring and supply chain extension that we did makes it worse.
I would agree. SP Futures down 21. NASDAQ Futures up 50, down 50. We'll actually come back a little bit. Carl, I'll talk at you next week. Thank you. Maddie, good job. We'll be back on Monday. Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.